Good evening. My name is Jan Rothschild, and I'm directing the Duff's Poetry Series. And I want to welcome you all and thank you for coming. Zia Gibson is here from the Arts and Humanities Commission, and she's going to talk for a minute about the award that the Arts and Humanities Commission gave last year, which is the reason for one of the reasons that this reading was set up. So here's Zia.
Hello. Nick Van Hevelingen, who's the director of the commission, asked me to give you his regrets. He was, he's out of town today. But I know, speaking on behalf of the commission and of the staff of the commission, that I'm very happy to be here today. It's a real honor for us to participate in Duff's Always in whatever capacity. In 1981, the commission did a citywide competition among writers to select three people who would become the first literary fellows for the city. That competition produced a selection by jurors of Charles Gunther and Arthur Brown and Howard Schwartz as our first fellows. In May of 1981, the fellowships were awarded in a party here in this very fine establishment, Duff's. The only condition of the fellowship was that the artists were to use the money for whatever purposes they deemed important and necessary, and that it was the intention of the commission that the money perhaps make it a little bit easier for them to live so that they could concentrate more fully on their art. The condition was that after the fellowship year had elapsed, the three writers were to, in their own way, make a so-called report to the community. And each of the people in their fellowship applications had indicated that what they intended to do for their report to the community was a reading. So last year in, I guess, early summer, we began talking to Charles and Howard and to Arthur, trying to figure out what the context might be for this report. Should it be part of the PM series or part of Duff series or whatever? And then, as you all know, Arthur's untimely death. So as a result, we are here tonight, I think in a spirit of community, to hear the reports of Charles and Howard and to hear through a tape and through the reading of Shirley LaFleur, Arthur's own words, as the city of St. Louis's three poet laureates. It's nice to be here, and I'm sure we'll all enjoy what's going to come. Thank you.
Charles Gunther is the author of 7 books of poetry and translations, and he's published in over 300 American and foreign magazines and anthologies. He's well known as one of the best translators in America, and he's taught creative writing at McKendree College and the University of Missouri at St. Louis. He was co-winner of the Poetry Society of America's Witter Bynner Translation Grant in 1979, and of course the fellowship last year. And I'd like to welcome Charles Gunther.
Get off to an inauspicious start. I had as a kind of report last April a reading here, and I felt I should not repeat some of the poems I read in that program. And of course our main program tonight is dedicated to Arthur Brown and to his memory, a poet whom I admired very much, who's, in fact, we dedicated our Poetry Society of America program last October, co-dedicated it to Arthur Brown. I have, as part of my project, some new poems from the French of Alain Bosquet, a poet whose selected poems I did some years ago. It's this little New Directions volume, co-translated. And Bosquet, who was quite young in World War II and was one of the finest of French poets in World War II in the resistance movement, has continued writing poetry through the years. And one of his latest books is Songs for the End of a Century. I have a few selections from that, and to begin, a definition of a poet. To become a poet, one must be an imbecile, as this dawn is foolish to think itself a light, as the old pebble is quite idiotic if it pretends it stops a galloping horse. Oh, what intelligence one must have to become a poet, more than this dawn which computes the moment of arrival, or that proud flint which commands the colt to fall before it. To become a poet, one must first love, with cultivated and yet not too strong a love. One must first love the stone and the colt, the daylight and the mist, the moon and the infinite, the crowd and silence. Then, as here, to tell it very simply, admitting that every word is just a lie. Portrait of an Intruder. The man threw a pistachio to the pigeon, drank his Campari, left 20 cents in the saucer, perused a document, sniffed at a red flower, shook a hefty fist in the air, changed his tie before the indifferent customers, took a racing form from the adjoining table, left the tavern, returned in front of the church with a nervous look, offered candy to the schoolgirl sitting on the edge of the fountain, brought a cigar butt up to his mouth, rolled his shoulders to give himself some courage, and scarcely trembling, pulled a revolver out of his pocket. It reads a little better in French. Letter to whom? Love, the lake has your skin this morning, and the mountain your flesh. Absence adds to our tenderness like a lung. The stork, closing its wing, resembles your arm when it smooths a bit of blue. The orange trees are at once ashamed of their eloquent charm and proud to arouse ecstasy. A traveler, come by what ship? Gather pebbles. Perhaps there lives in a corner of the spirit a poem afraid to take form. A fire goes out in the town, and your body is lit, so that nothing in this night might diminish desire. The island would return slowly under the waters, and spring delay in rediscovering you. That's all of that particular group. I have a few selections I thought perhaps might have been, Arthur might have wanted, liked, but I have some now, a few of my own poems. This is a note to accompany a given poem, and it recollects meetings with Ezra Pound. It's when he was at St. Elizabeth with his crowd of poets and writers and ballet dancers and who else around him. In a sunny chair under the green oaks, E.P. said, there are 1,000 ways to say anything, and any 30 of them may be right. And now, not knowing better how to grind time, I tried 1,000 ways to say one thing, and wrote 300 words to say three, as if what they said could be said any other way. But somehow it has to surface even in divine prolixities, for love isn't a keepsake to put away. It's something to spend alive, to burn, a lamp against the dark. This is from a new group of poems which does not mention at all the word love in the text of the poems, but it is a kind of a definition of kinds of love. He and she are absent. Only we, you and I, are here. We are named. You aren't she, but you, never anything else. Others will speak of you against my wishes, but what others say of you will not be you. The end of the world. Despair is gentle or it's violent, writes Barthes. With the former, we're resigned or like a nomad who has lost his tent in the storm, everything scattered in the wind. Seldom is the amorous catastrophe gentle, not when the overwhelming tide spares all destruction but the single me. The gift of calamity others are denied. And what's the total reckoning of the loss? The power of the self that once projected into the other, to the soul and bone, lies helpless as a wounded albatross. The victim unendurably rejected, in its own image, ludicrous and alone. I think I read this one the last time. A stranger told me something about you I didn't know. I bent an ear, pretending to be indifferent, impervious to gossip. But the shallow secret struck me like a blade. Why didn't you tell me? It's a commonplace thing. Did you think I knew? Did you care if I knew? These questions may never be answered, and the fragment of fact lie forever heavy between us. I have a couple other translations here. Those were not, of course, but I think were in the surrealist Pierre Reverdy, René Guy Cadou, both French. The Turning Heart. I think this is not in Rexroth's volume. I did a volume and almost got to do it. If Rexroth hadn't done it for New Directions, they'd have taken mine, but it's been the story of my life. But nevertheless, I do have a volume of poems that were not in his collection, which is by no means large, but very well done. And this is one of them. We need not go any farther. The jewels are caught in the lyre. The black butterflies of frenzy thoughtlessly stir the ashes of the sunset. Scarcely returned from bitter voyages around hearts tossed to the bottom of buildings, on the stage front of prairies and pastures like bare shells before the sea, scarcely stirred by the love of life, gazes woven with mine, nameless faces of old memories, diamonds of love that float upon the scum, in order to seek the bottom of the vase, the touching secret of my misfortune's blood, I must plunge my hand to the roots of my heart and my clumsy fingers break the rim of the vase. The blood that casts this heavy screen over your eyes, the unknown emotion that makes your lip tremble, and this cruel cold that takes away your fever crumples the linen of your flesh in every corner. I love you without ever having seen you except in the shadows, in my dream's darkness where only I can see. I love you and you have not yet emerged from the number, mysterious form stirring in the night. For what I really love is what expires once only on this unsilvered mirror, which tears my heart and dies on the surface of the day of the sky closed before my diminishing desire. This piece from René Guy Cadou who I think was the Dylan Thomas of French poetry, had a life resembling Thomas's in many ways, and his poetic style was similar to Thomas's. He even looked like Dylan Thomas. Maybe that's why I think he was died at age 31 in 1951, a legend now. I think about that little room of earth that belongs to me and fits me perfectly, and which I've praised on the strength of queer posters that cover everywhere the bare walls of my life. I have willed its owner the freedom to plant his scattering of winter wheat. While I'm not there, the wheat grows very sparse, but it may hope to nourish on my heart. When I'll be stirred up like a woman's womb, tortured for 9 months by the love of a child, it's the devil or the good Lord if my guts will not be crowned by a miracle of wheat. Or maybe after all, this sad cardboard will only decorate the suburbs tomorrow, a scrubby thistle where a limping donkey comes to browse, a gypsy caravan with fires all around. I'm not so proud as to believe my spirit must inevitably pass into the buds of wheat. I can let my bones trail over the ground for a mangy dog to use to whiten his teeth. I have I'd better close with a light poem. I think you've heard, and I don't think I had this poem, this little piece the last time. You've heard the piece about the Lowell clan is rather odd. Lawrence rules the Harvard Yard. Percy saw canals on Mars. Amy loves to smoke cigars and so forth. And there are some takeoffs on that. And I read, this is a clan. I've long admired the clan of Jackson. I wish I had sometimes one wishes one had a different last name, a simpler last name. But anyway, let us go. I've long admired the clan of Jackson, Reggie as a man of action, that famed old fighting doodle dandy, two-term Tennessean Andy, the many things old Stonewall won, renown, the Battle of Bull Run. Now Henry proves that one can mix common sense and politics. And then there's talented Mahalia. From Mississippi to Australia are namesake cities, towns, and ports, centers of industry, resorts. Many a man's ideal mate is the embodiment of Kate, or another of a similar gender and same profession, yclept Glenda. Even Perkins, Pollock aren't the same without Jay as a proud surname. In all who's, look, there's no lack of far-flung famous sons of Jack.
And in case you didn't know, that's Maurice King. And Maurice is a saxophonist and composer, and he plays with Free in Concert and also the Emerging Forces Art Ensemble.